y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of killer clowns. So sorry, it's terrifying.
On Memorial Day weekend of 1990, 40-year-old Marlene Warren heard the doorbell ring in her Palm Beach County home. When she opened the door, she was delighted to find a clown standing on her porch, holding two balloons and a basket of carnations. The clown handed the gifts to Marlene, then pulled out a gun and shot her in the face. 2 days later, Marlene died in the local hospital with nobody understanding who hated Marlene so much that they'd commit such a horrific crime. An investigation that spanned 27 years would finally reveal who painted their face in white clown makeup that day and murdered Marlene Warren in cold blood.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story. It's not the bigger crime, but it is a crime in itself. Who's delighted to see a clown at the door?
I know. Well, and that's the thing, though. We'll talk about it. But Marlene loved clowns.
Yeah.
So obviously, this was not a random thing. You'd have to know that about her. I mean, Okay. There's a 2020 on this episode.
There's also, case. I swear, there's a Snapped. Because I knew this case before we covered it.
Oh, I did not.
Which never happens to me. Yeah.
Maybe there is a Snapped. Yeah. But it's called The Case of the Killer Clown, the episode. And of course, they really play up the killer clown thing. And they put like a lot of images of like real scary fucking clowns on there.
Namely, the new It.
Mm-hmm. But even just like random, like just
scary clowns.
Yes. And like the music they do is really scary. And I'm like, all right, 2020, you don't want me to sleep tonight. Great. Thanks.
I think it's so funny. I didn't find it scary at all. But
oh my God, I was slightly terrified
because I've seen most of the movie, like Joker, It, all of the above. Like, you know, anything that has to do with clowns, I've probably seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
But
nope.
I get a text yesterday from Torella and Madison, who, thank you for writing this up.
Thank you, Madison.
And it's like, are you fucking kidding me right now? I was like, Torella, and I told Miss KB, and he was like, she shit in her pants, didn't she? And I was like,
100%. Yep. 100%. Yeah.
I know.
Did not appreciate that 2020. All right. So let's talk about who Marlene was. And to do that, we're going to go way back to the beginning. Marlene Mae McKinnon Warren was born on April 15th, 1950 in Mount Clemens, Michigan. And she spent—
That is so much alliteration.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Yeah. Oh, wow. Marlene Mae McKinnon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mount Clemens. Yeah. Oh, Michigan. God.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
She spent most of her childhood on her grandfather's farm in the small town just north of Detroit. She was the middle of three girls, and her mother, Shirley Twing, said that she was always smiling. Her stepfather, Bill, agreed with his wife, who described Marlene as kind, loving, and always helpful. Marlene got married at an extremely young age, and by the time she was 18, she already had two children.
I was shocked. Holy Shooketh, shit. Even.
Yeah. Uh-huh. John and Joseph, who went by Joey Ahrens. Unfortunately, it wasn't very long before the young family experienced an absolutely devastating loss. Marlene's husband died, and by the age of 20, she was a widow with two young children. And I think they said he was in a car accident, right?
Oh, no, no, that's a different...
No?
This is a different death?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But...
Then we don't know. Do we not know?
I don't think we know.
Okay.
But this is not Civil War times. You heard it right. This is recently. She was 20 and a widow with two kids.
Right. Yeah. Can you imagine?
No.
But she was a wonderful mother. I mean, this is a very difficult time. She's got a lot on her shoulders, but Joey described her as a person of love. He said that she was just a wonderful mother, and he has only fond memories of her. When Michael Warren came into Marlene's life, she quickly fell for him. The two soon got married, and then Mike became a stepfather to John and Joey. And Joey said, you know, Mike was a father figure for he and his brother. He thought Mike was a great husband to his mother. He seemed to really be a great fit for their family, you know? Marlene and Mike decided to move the family to South Florida. They wanted to have a fresh start. And they eventually ended up residing in Wellington, Florida, in an exclusive community called Wellington Aero Club. The city of Wellington is one of the richest areas in Palm Beach County. They called it over and over moneyed. Moneyed.
I didn't know that was a word.
This moneyed area, this moneyed community. They even called Marlene moneyed at one point. And I'm like, okay. I know I it's like a it. Word. Yeah, I don't like it. But a lot of celebrities have owned houses in this area, including Vanilla Ice, Bruce Springsteen, Tommy Lee Jones, and Bill Gates.
I just want to side note, Vanilla Ice, good for him, man. He's like doing his like house flipping shit now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so proud of him.
I know. Good for him.
Pivot.
Okay. The Aero Club, okay, it's called Wellington Aero Club. The reason is many of the houses were built around a grass airstrip. And so these homes have airplane hangars in their backyard so that their residents can park their planes or helicopters.
So if, like a lot of us do, if you have your airplane.
Sure.
Or your helicopters.
Yeah, mine's a helicopter, but yeah.
Okay, well, okay. I look down on people with helicopters because I'm like an airplane guy, but but you can move there because out your backyard, you got an airstrip.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that way you can take your plane or your helicopter to the office. You don't have to sit in traffic.
Three times a week you could do that.
Sure. Yeah. One of them does. Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay.
This
so
is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm so sorry. I got this mixed up. All right, and then in 1988, the family was hit with another life-shattering event. John, the oldest of Marlene's sons, was 22 when he ran through a stop sign in West Palm Beach and struck another vehicle, and he was pronounced dead on the scene. Cannot imagine.
No.
Marlene was obviously devastated by the loss of her son, but she did what she could do to keep her life together. And she had become a very successful businesswoman. She owned about 17 pieces of rental property in a lower income area of Palm Beach County. And Mike owned a used car lot named Bargain Motors. Question. The investigators called it a Bargain Motors. Did you notice that?
I did not notice that.
This one investigator, every single time he would be like, and that was a Bargain Motors. And when he would drive to a Bargain Motors, and I was like, why are you doing that? Is it part of the name? Or because nobody else said it, everybody else just said going Bargain to Motors.
The Kroger's.
Like, yeah. But it was even worse because he said a Bargain Motors. And I was like, is it like a plus Bargain Motors? And people are forgetting that? Or like, I don't know. Anyway, he said a Bargain Motors every single time.
I can't with this fucking guy. Yeah.
To neighbors, it seemed like Marlene was continuing to thrive in both her personal and business life. And she was still the same woman who always had a smile on her face. And she was willing to help anyone who needed it.
So on the morning of Saturday, May 26th, 1990, this is Memorial Day weekend, 21-year-old Joey. I didn't realize he was that old.
Yeah, at the time.
Well, no, I mean, I knew that, but in when I first watched it, I didn't realize that he was as old as he was. But he was at his family's ranch-style home in South Florida, and his friends, Gene and Wendell Pratt and then Mindy Perez, they were also with him. They were hanging out with him. They were going to have breakfast with the family. So Marlene was in the kitchen. She was getting ready for breakfast. She was cooking. Then the doorbell rings and she goes to the door to answer it. And Joey said the last thing that he heard before this happened, his mom said, "Oh, how pretty." And then he hears a loud bang.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Joey walks into the foyer. He sees his mother fall to the ground. She's gasping for air. And it was clear that she had been shot in the face. Joey's friends obviously were stunned. They watched him kneel on the floor beside his dying mother. It was later determined from witness accounts and evidence that when Marlene opened up the door, she found a clown standing on the doorstep. The clown, who was dressed in costume with a wig, nose, and white face paint, was holding two foil balloons and a white basket full of red and white carnations. One of the balloons was red, and it was heart-shaped, and it said, "You're the greatest." The clown handed the balloons to Marlene and then pulled out a gun and shot her in the face. The clown then walked down the steps and got into a white Chrysler LeBaron and left the scene. Joey watched as the clown walked off, and he gets into his car. I could not believe this. Okay, so he watches the clown leave, get into the driver's seat. And he said that the only thing that he noticed that, I guess, like, set this clown apart. Was this clown had brown eyes.
Because you can't tell anything else about the person. Everything's covered with makeup and there's a wig and, you know.
Right.
But one thing that you're, I mean, I don't know if they had colored contacts then. I'm assuming not. Or, you know, not as not easily as easy accessible.
Yeah,
as now. So he's like, okay, but I do know this person has brown eyes.
Right. So he gets into his own car and he tries to follow the clown because he's like, I've got to catch up to that car. I have to know who did this. But he couldn't catch up. A neighbor, Bill Kramer, was out walking his dog when he heard a loud noise. He thought that it was a nail gun. Several people ran out of the Warren's front door yelling, "They've shot Joey's mother." And paramedics arrived on scene and rushed a critically injured Marlene Warren to the hospital while investigators sealed off the crime scene and began their investigation.
So Joey is interviewed by the police and he's trying to tell them everything he can remember about the clown. Of course, the brown eye color. But the fact also that the person was fully dressed in a clown costume except for the feet. And it's interesting. I was listening to the investigator talking to him. So he's asking questions like, he is, you know, does this person have a wig and the makeup and all that? And then the investigator says, what about shoes? Are they wearing clown shoes?
I would not have even thought to ask
me
that.
Me either. And I'm just like, that's why you guys do what you do. And he says, no, actually, this person was wearing like dark, like work boots.
Army boots.
Oh, army boots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joey describes the car that the clown drove off in. So they put out a bolo for a white Chrysler LeBaron.
Side note, I'm so sorry. I never ever thought that we would have a case where we said the word clown.
Oh my God.
So many times. Yeah. So many times. Yeah.
At this point, Marlene is clinging to life at the hospital. Doctors are doing everything they can to give her the best chance of survival. They found one bullet embedded in the C2 vertebra of her spine in the neck area, and it appeared to be from a .38 caliber gun.
I was struck by, because in the Snapped, I swear to God it was a Snapped, but in this episode of 2020, they said that she had metal and bone embedded in her tongue.
Hmm. Wow.
That struck me.
Yeah. I mean, that's just devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Mike Warren had left his home earlier that morning around 10 a.m. He was going to a racetrack in Miami with a friend. So he was about halfway to Miami, and then he gets a call that his wife has been shot and is in critical condition. So he turns around and he heads straight back to Wellington. So police are collecting evidence. They're looking for clues at the Warren house. They are, you know, trying to figure out who in the world would want Marlene dead. And nobody knew of any enemies that she had, and certainly nobody that would want her dead. Like, my God. But then you add, okay, but also who would dress as a clown to do, like, what? So the biggest pieces of evidence that they have at this time are the two foil balloons and the basket of carnations. Luckily, they'd been left with Marlene. The clown had not taken them, but there were no shell casings or gun or anything like that at the scene. So they start canvassing the area for stores that could have sold the clown the balloons and the flower basket. And luckily for them, they found the heart balloon that read, "You're the greatest." And that was only sold in one store. It was a Publix nearby. And then they talked to the clerks there and they said, yes, I remember selling that same basket of flowers and balloons to somebody just an hour and a half before the shooting took place.
Hmm.
2 days after her daughter was shot, Marlene's mother finally made the impossible decision to take her off of life support. On May 28th, which was Memorial Day, Marlene Warren passed away at Palms West Hospital with her son and her mother by her side. Joey had been holding her hand all day, and he was like, you know, I was hoping that I would feel something and that she would, you know,
if there would be
some sort of, sign, but he never did. Not long after, Joey went on a local radio show to talk about what happened in hopes of generating some new leads. The radio host asked him, could you tell if the murderer was a man or a woman, you know, like by their gait, anything like that. And Joey said, well, I assumed it was a man. The hands seemed big. They seemed pretty tall. He did also mention the boots the clown was wearing seemed like tactical boots. So now the police are on the lookout for a murderer, and they felt confident that this shooter had purchased the gifts at that local Publix. So now they're going to try to find out where the clown costume came from. So they call all the costume shops in a nearby area until they found a West Palm Beach shop where two employees said that they'd sold a clown costume to somebody a few days prior to the murder. So Deborah offered a clerk at West Palm Beach's Spotlight Capizio shop.
That is a mouthful.
Yikes. Yeah.
yikes.
A lot of stuff going on there.
I love the word Capizio, by the way.
Never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah. Is it a thing? Is it a place? Is it a what?
I thought it was shoes. Capizios. Like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know. So they're getting ready to close for the night. This is the evening of May 24th. And they literally have just locked the doors. And somebody runs up and is knocking on the door and is like, oh my gosh, I've just really got to come in and get a clown costume. I'll be super quick. Okay.
I'm sorry. Like,
it's a clown emergency.
Exactly. In what situation do you have a clown? Come on.
Exactly. And so Deborah was like, I mean, we told this person, sorry, come back tomorrow. Like, we're closed. Get over it. And so they were like, no, I'm not going to be long. I promise. I know exactly what I need. And so finally they're like, oh my, fine, come in, like whatever. So this person picked out a standard clown suit along with a curly wig, a sponge nose, and a set of clown makeup. They got just whatever was the cheapest. But they did make a point of asking for extra white makeup because they needed to make sure that their entire face was covered. And Deborah described the person as looking very androgynous. She said this person was tall, maybe around 5'8", wearing jeans and a plaid button-up shirt. I think she used the term lumberjack shirt.
Yes, she did.
And work boots. And they did not want the clown shoes, which she thought was also interesting because you're getting the whole clown outfit, but you don't want the clown shoes. So like, what the fuck? That's going to stand out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and also the fact that you insisted after the store is closed.
Gotta have it.
Right.
But I don't want the shoes. Forget it.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, I could understand if like the next day was Halloween or something. If you're like, oh, fuck, I didn't get my fucking costume for Halloween. It's a fucking emergency. But yeah, it's May. So they're like, I don't know what the deal is. So finally, you know, because they're telling all this information to the police and they're finally like, can I ask what this is in regards to? Like, what's going on? So they tell them there was somebody shot by somebody wearing a clown costume and they were just devastated. Gutted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just, you know, and of course they couldn't have known and like,
right. It's not
somebody
their
wants
fault.
To buy a costume. They want to buy a costume. Yeah. But they right. were just like, did we help somebody commit a murder? Like they were really upset, but they did provide the investigators with a significant clue. This person was a woman. For show.
A woman clune.
So on May 30th, just 4 days after the murder, employees called police to report what appeared to be an abandoned vehicle in the parking lot of a local Winn-Dixie store. The employees said it'd been there for a few days. There was nobody in it. There was nobody around it. And it was a white Chrysler LeBaron.
Quick question. Josie Grossi, she drove a LeBaron.
Oh, did she?
Right, because when she tried to switch with her brother, didn't she say you could name it like LeBaron? And then she was like, fully loaded.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe?
I don't remember.
I'm confused. Specifically. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So investigators seal off the vehicle, they get a search warrant, and they tow the vehicle back to their headquarters where they're going to inspect it. So there are obvious like red, orange, curly fibers in the front seat, back seat, and on the driver's door. They're sent out.
I feel like that could be a clown wig or it could be Turl's pubes.
Well, certainly not a red trilobal fiber, is it? So they send these out for analysis and they're determined to be acrylic, probably from a wig. These are definitely, I mean, and if you look at them, they're very obviously not human hairs. I mean, come on. The license plate on the vehicle was traced back to Payless Car Rental. This is a local lot. The company, though, had reported the vehicle as stolen about 2 weeks before. So, well, I mean, fuck. You know?
Yeah. And y'all aren't ready. You're not ready.
You're not ready.
So the more investigators dug into the vehicle and where it might have come from, the stranger things got. Payless Car Rental was a business and it was at war with A Bargain Motors, or Bargain Motors if you're nasty, the car lot run by Mike Warren. The two businesses, they often competed for sales and business, but recently Bargain Motors had done something that really pissed Payless off. Bargain placed an ad in the Yellow Pages that read Payless in big letters with their information underneath.
And it wasn't like they wrote pay less, like two words, like you mm-hmm. can pay less here. They wrote Payless in big letters as one word.
Yeah. So what they were hoping to do is people who were looking for Payless lot, Payless Motors, they were hoping that they, or Payless Car Rental, excuse me, they were hoping that they would accidentally call Bargain Motors on accident and then expecting to get Payless's, you know, like they're stealing
That's
their business.
That's shiesty.
It's 100% shiesty.
Because they're making people are fully believing that I'm calling Payless.
Yeah.
They don't know.
No.
Like, come on.
It happens all the time still, though. Yeah.
And we're going to find out there are people who legitimately.
They got duped.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's just crazy.
Payless reportedly sued Bargain Motors over this ad, which I feel like you should be able to do. I mean, that's like.
It'd be different if they had written like pay less in two different words. Like you can pay less here.
And just, even smaller than that. That's like, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you're trying to purport yourself as a completely different business at that point.
Yeah. A couple told investigators that they'd rented a vehicle from Payless, and when it was time to return the vehicle, they accidentally called Bargain Motors. So whoever they spoke to directed them to leave the rented vehicle in the Payless lot outside of the gate and just go ahead and leave the keys in it. No big deal. And they were like, that's kind of weird, but all right, we have a plane to catch. We'll just do that.
Yeah, like whatever your process is, we'll do it. It's not my job to judge it.
And it was rumored that Mike and one of his employees stole the vehicle to get back at Payless for the lawsuit.
Okay. But that's, I mean, you hear from these customers, they don't have a dog in the fight, but they say, yeah, we rented that car. And when we looked up in the yellow pages to call them and say, how do we give this back to you? Mm-hmm. This is what we were told.
Yep.
Come on.
I just cannot. It's insane to me. Mm-hmm. Insane. But okay, so as detectives continued to dig into Mike's business dealings and a possible connection to Marlene's murder, they found that he was being investigated by other authorities for suspicion of rolling back odometers on the vehicles at his lot. Think Matilda and her parents, Danny DeVito and Pearl.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Rhea Pearl, excuse me.
Rhea Perlman.
God damn it. Okay, yes, but you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And actually, they ended up divorcing, which is really sad. But they did that.
Yeah.
So all the shiesty shit that they were doing, this is Mike.
Mm-hmm.
They also learned of rumors that Mike was having an affair with a woman named Sheila Keene at Bargain Motors. Employees reported having seen Sheila and Mike engage in sexual activities in his office.
Oh my God.
I think that's bad. And both Mike and Sheila were like, no, that didn't happen. You didn't see anything. We're not together. When they wrestle with their shirts off.
He was just checking something.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. On October 25th, 1990, police executed a search warrant at Bargain Motors and the nighttime raid, where they seized filing cabinets full of documents, gave them enough ammunition to arrest Mike. On the next day, October 26th, Mike Warren was arrested and charged with over 60 charges, including odometer tampering, grand theft, and racketeering. Detectives had proof that Mike had been repossessing vehicles that were sold by his dealership, then reporting them stolen and collecting the insurance money.
Piece of shit.
I know. No wonder he could live in like a super upscale place in Palm Beach.
Well, and you know what? I always think with stuff like this, if you, how much effort and planning and setup and all that does that this kind of take.
Mm-hmm.
If you had put that much effort into running a good business, you'd probably make more money. Like, my God.
That's literally, you have just broken down the reason why I hate to say I live for stuff like this, but like the con man or fraud or stuff like that. It's so interesting to me because I'm like, why? You're obviously mm-hmm. smart.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously working, but like direct it somewhere else.
Exactly. Like, come on.
Yeah. So as Mike waited for his day in court, Marlene's murder is going cold. And it seemed as though Mike was not the perfect husband that everybody thought. In fact, some people who knew him said that he was a shit magnet.
I know. I was going to say, he's the shit magnet.
Yes, he was a shit magnet.
That's a quote from, I don't know if they released the same week.
I don't think it does. I think it's a little bit off. Yeah, but
episode one of Boston Marathon bombing. Mm-hmm. So just, you'll get it when you listen to that.
So he once owned a plane that suddenly disappeared and then was found with a broken engine. And then he also owned racehorses and one randomly turned up dead. And something about him just rubbed people the wrong way. One of the neighbors said he was, what did they say? He was different or odd. What did they say?
One person used the word slimy, I think.
Yes. Yes. Marlene's mom couldn't stand him.
Yes. Yeah. She didn't like him at all. He was just one of those guys who like, he was charming.
Yeah.
He could sell a lot of stuff. But he left you feeling not good after. Like you
like
felt
icky.
Yes. Yeah. Icky.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously he's a con man.
Mm-hmm.
Some close to the Warrens said that Marlene and Mike's relationship was in trouble. They were unable to get a divorce due to the financial complications that would come with dividing their assets. Like, they had the car lot, right? And all of Marlene's rental properties.
I didn't think about that. That's 17. And if they're in both of your names, damn.
I know.
That's a headache.
This is why you don't get married.
Nope. And if you do, just have secret assets that are just your own.
Just keep it in your pocket for secret eating.
Exactly.
So Mike was spending more and more time at work, and he obviously was spending, you know, you spend more time at work. You're spending less time at home. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Could it be the topless wrestling you were doing in your office all day? Or
that takes time.
So obviously there are rumors of Mike's infidelity. And in 1992, Mike goes on trial on the charges related to the Bargain Motors situation. During the trial, one of the assistant state attorneys mentioned that Mike was suspected of being involved in the murder of Marlene. And this gave Mike's attorney the avenue to accuse investigators of railroading his client to ultimately charge him with murder.
Why would you say that? That has nothing to do with this case. You know you can't say that.
Exactly. You know, and it just upsets. Do you want to win or do you not want to win? Like, yeah. I'm confused.
Honestly, that should have been a mistrial.
I know.
You're like, all right, we're done here. Like, come on.
Mistrials happen for a lot less than that. But the judge, he agreed. And he was like, yeah, you can't fucking do that. But the jury still found, I was shocked. The jury still found Mike guilty of 43 of his charged counts. And he was sentenced to 9 years in prison. Yeah. So Mike goes to prison. Marlene's friends and family, they're like, okay, he should be facing time for whatever involvement he had in Marlene's murder.
Yep.
And her stepfather said that he had a gut feeling about Mike, that he was hiding something. He didn't believe that Mike had committed the murder himself, but he knew more than he was letting on about what happened. Mm-hmm. Investigators, they feel the same way. But Mike had a rock solid alibi. All of the evidence they had against him involving the crime was circumstantial. So their suspicion increased even more when they received an anonymous phone call telling them that in addition to looking into Mike, I'm like fucking up my words all over the place.
Yes.
I know, it's messy. They needed to investigate Sheila Keene, the woman that there were reports of Mike having an affair with. And the caller said that the two knew what happened to Marlene.
So Sheila
It's contagious.
I was like, here, I'm
cream.
Gonna, here, let me pick up the pieces here to show you how it's done.
Oh.
Two words, didn't even get them. Okay,
it's perfect. I love it.
Sheila Keene grew up in a small country town. Everybody talked about how pretty she was, that she was attractive.
Why does this always happen? Every time they're like, oh my God, she was drop dead gorgeous. People were enamored by her. And I'm like, I'm not seeing it.
She looks fine, but like,
kind of plain.
Yeah.
Okay. And she wore lumberjack shirts.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
I mean, I just don't. Yeah. And she like is always getting noticed for her looks. Men were all around her. I'm like, all right. I don't know. Maybe it's the long brown hair. I don't know.
And you know what? Wear your lumberjack shirt. Like I'm fine with it, but like, okay. All right.
She just doesn't look like they're almost describing her. Nobody used this word, but they're almost describing her as like a bombshell. You know, she's like the whatever, like the town hottie, basically. And it's just like, then you see her and you're like, that's not what anybody associates any of these words with. But okay.
Well, and I think that you guys understand that we would not go after her looks if they didn't make such a big fucking deal about it.
No, they made such a big deal about it.
Yeah.
But they did say that she wanted a life with money and she worked hard to find that life for herself.
She didn't work hard enough to make the money for herself.
Well, she didn't say she wanted to make the money.
She just wanted to have the money.
Exactly. So she was actually married when she first met Mike. She was 27 and he was almost 40. So she was working at Bargain Motors and she was actually repossessing vehicles, which is like, don't you have to be a lumberjack to do that? I mean, gosh, yeah. Like I would think that's a dangerous thing, because if you come up to somebody and you're like, I'm taking your car now. Mm. And like to repossess, you've got to drive like a tow truck, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to just hand you the keys. So,
well, and how are you supposed to get, like, you just wish your way there and then you drive home in their car? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a pretty crazy thing. So they said she was fearless. She didn't care that it was dangerous what she was doing. She was just like, I'm going to go and fucking take their car. In 1990, she filed a petition with the court against her husband due to reports of domestic violence. After the temporary injunction was granted, Sheila moved out of the house she shared with her husband and into an apartment. And guess who paid for that apartment?
Who?
Mike Warren.
Gross.
Yeah. Residents who lived in the same apartment complex as Sheila said they thought Mike was her husband because he was literally always at the apartment. And people thought that Marlene...
Wonder.
I know,
why he
right?
wasn't home all the time.
Exactly. And people around Marlene were like, you know, she's obviously suspicious that he's cheating on her.
Yeah.
You know? Now, could this have led him, many people, well, I don't say many people, you know, people cheat that don't kill their spouses, right? But could this have been motive for him? Could he have then been like, okay, well, there's only one way out of this, right?
I think what you meant was like many people who cheat do not.
Yes. Okay. That's what I mean. Yeah. Because, you know, it's like, of course, not everybody who cheats is like, okay, well, I'm going to kill them. Like that's,
right.
you know, that's, so it doesn't mean.
One doesn't lead, it's not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. So,
or it is mutually, I don't know the way to say it still. Yeah. I still don't know.
Nah, we'll get some letters about that. Thanks. Hey, you guys. It's us again.
Yay. It's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking like, WTF, where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us. Just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG. So the detectives are like, all right, Mike and Sheila are involved in Marlene's murder, but there's nothing concrete to charge either of them, so the case goes cold.
In 2013, the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office received a federal grant for $125,000 to take another look at cold cases. Marlene's case was reopened, and the sheriff's office now had money for enhanced testing, along with advances in DNA testing since, you know, 90s, not as good as 2013, right?
Right. They're barely be able to tell that the wig hairs were not human hairs at that point, basically.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't look like it came out of someone's head, but I'm not sure.
Let's put it in a bag and we'll test it in 20 years.
Exactly.
But they also had a new sheriff and they had a new district attorney. The sheriff made it a priority to look at Marlene's case with fresh eyes. The first thing that detectives did was go back to the physical evidence found in the Chrysler LeBaron, the white Chrysler LeBaron. Mm-hmm. They sent the curly synthetic pubic hairs from Torella's, curly synthetic fibers in for testing, along with strands of what looked like brown, long human hair. And detectives hoped that the hair would have enough DNA that they could connect the vehicle to a suspect. In 1997, Mike had been released from prison. He leaves Florida immediately, basically, goes to Virginia along with his girlfriend, Debbie. The couple lived in a huge mansion. I mean, this is like a big ass house on a lake with a boat dock. They even owned a popular fast food restaurant called the Purple Cow. The couple were adored by their employees who looked at Mike and Debbie as family. They worked hard. They did multiple jobs at the restaurant. Like they did everything basically. Mm-hmm. And they did everything that they could to keep the business thriving so they could pay their employees well. Mike and Debbie's neighbors said that the two were just a happy, fun couple. It was difficult to find anyone who had anything negative to say about them. But as difficult as that was, it was not impossible.
Nope.
Listen to this shit. So one neighbor said that they had a run-in with Mike on their property. One day, Mike is in the backyard. So as you can imagine, like, their house doesn't just go right into the water, right? So there's like a little rocky, beachy type of situation to go to the lake. Mm-hmm. He's out there on his neighbor's property with his tractor trying to move rocks. And like, the neighbor...
like taking rocks away.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Which is very bizarre.
And big rocks, big enough to need a tractor.
Yeah. What the fuck do you want with my fucking rocks, dude? Like, what? Get off my rocks! What are you doing?
Exactly.
Like, who has to say that? Like, that's when I had to tell Ask Ben to please don't kick your brother's apple. Why do I gotta say it out loud? Hey, man, don't haul my rocks. Please don't haul my rocks.
Yeah, stop cupping my rocks. It's weird.
Come on.
So the neighbor comes out and he's like, hey, man, why are you taking my rocks?
Mm-hmm.
And Mike is like, hey, come on. Can't we just be neighborly? Can I just have some of your rocks?
Well, like, I think what he said first was, fuck you. And then he's like,
well, hang on. No. Hang on.
Oh, no. I guess that was after.
Hang on. That happens, but it doesn't happen yet. So, okay. Yeah. Mike is like, hey, man, I'm just, you know, why can't you just be a neighbor and let me have some of your fucking rocks? I just love your rocks. I just really...
What is he going to do with these rocks? I just saw your rocks and I really wanted your rocks. So I came over here and I'm fucking just taking your rocks. Give me your rocks.
I know. Like, stop stealing rocks. But anyway, so his neighbor was like, hey, no, actually the neighborly thing would be if you called me on the telephone and you said, hey, man, let me get some of them rocks.
Can I have some rocks?
Yeah.
I know it's a weird question. Don't ask me what I'm doing with these rocks. It's only for, you know, my business and none of yours, but I need those damn rocks.
Yeah. Like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Let me scoop them rocks.
Yeah. And you know, the neighbor is like, man, if you just asked me if you could have the rocks, I would have given them to you. I'd give you the rocks. It's not about the rocks, but you didn't ask me. You came over here with a tractor. You're stealing my rocks.
This episode should be called Clunes and Rocks.
Yes.
It's outrageous how many times.
What is happening?
The rocks. Yep. And so this is when Mike says, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
And he did scoop the rocks right out. Yeah. And
you'll never see those rocks again.
No. And you know what? Good rocks. Hard to find.
Hard to come by. Absolutely.
I know.
Yep.
So that neighbor was like, Mike was just a really big bully.
Idiot.
He like stole my rocks.
Yeah, totally stole my rocks.
With a tractor. Not fair. I know.
Come on.
Marlene's case is now reopened and being actively investigated. And several local Florida investigative reporters were following Mike's actions closely. One reporter in particular followed Mike all the way to Virginia. And she goes and she speaks to his neighbors, who had just absolutely glowing, lovely things to say about Mike and Debbie. But one reporter invited the reporter in to elaborate on what they knew about Mike. And the reporter asked about Sheila Keene. And the neighbor was like, Sheila Keene is not a person. We don't know her. But who you're thinking of is Debbie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean Debbie.
Right. That's Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
When you say Sheila, do you mean Debbie? So in case you didn't know, Sheila is Debbie.
Okay. I was honestly, I didn't get
shocked.
It. Yeah. I was like, wow, he moves, you know, I was like, wow, he's having an affair with this woman, Sheila. And then he gets out of prison and he's just like, fuck you, Sheila. I'm with Debbie now. Like, damn.
Yep. It's Debbie.
Nope.
Sheila's Debbie. Debbie is Sheila. Yes. She was living under, obviously, a different name. And then she even dyed her hair blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Suspicious, right? Super sus.
Yeah. Super sus.
It was found out that once Sheila finally divorced her husband, she and Mike got married in 2002 in the Little White Chapel in Las Vegas. And in 2017, Palm Beach County detectives, armed with the new results of their DNA testing, called the Washington County Sheriff's Department in Virginia. They issued a warrant for the arrest of Sheila Keene on September 26th, 2017. Sheila and Mike, they're coming home from a road trip from Vermont. They get pulled over. They're in their white caddy.
Black.
I knew it. I don't know why I said white. They're in their black caddy.
Mm-hmm.
And they told Sheila that they had a warrant for her arrest for the murder of Marlene Warren, and she was taken into custody. Mike is just like, oh, what has happened on the outside of the black caddy?
Oh, you don't like it when people take things without asking, Mike? Do you not like that?
We remember the rocks, Mike.
Never forget the rocks.
But I mean, they couldn't charge Mike because they didn't have any evidence to do so.
Yeah. So Sheila was quick to rave her right.
Oh my God. Oh
my God.
You gave me so much shit about my reading.
You know what? And this is karma. This is why you don't do shit like that. Okay, guys, learn from my mistakes. Because now I no longer can read words. Okay. Sheila was quick to waive her rights to an extradition hearing. Police said that she seemed eager to be brought back to Palm Beach County to have her day in court. So what do? They drag it out for 5 years. Because she's like, fine, take me to court. Go ahead. Let's do it. But they announced that if she was convicted, they were seeking the death penalty or life in prison. But they were going to go for the death penalty. So, of course, Sheila is like, absolutely not.
Big balls.
I know. I had nothing to do with it. She's like, I have a rock solid alibi. I was out repoing cars the day that Marlene was murdered. But okay, if you think about that, though, what is involved in repossessing vehicles? And this is the early 90s, right? So no cell phone. Well, it is 1990. So she's driving a truck to where these cars are and she's picking them up. So unless you've got a witness or some kind of a report. But even a report would be a self-written report that says at 11:30, I picked up this car at this house, right?
I mean, this is exactly investigating yourself. Like,
well, I mean, it's just like, you're just, yeah, exactly. You're out and about for the day. You're driving to different locations. You could make any number of stops. You could, you know, you don't have cell phone evidence to show that you took a certain route and you did not go past Marlene Warren's house. You know, like there's no, but she says it's rock solid. I was out doing this. There's no way. She had a huge smile on her face in her mugshot. And she had also been arrested when she was 21 for shoplifting. And in that one, she's smiling really big. I don't know if she, I don't think I'd smile in a mugshot. Cause I'm like, you just are used to when, you know, somebody takes a picture, you're like, geez, but I think if you're arrested for murder, you would, I would be like,
right.
Oh my God.
Sobbing hysterically. Yeah. But I'm just imagining somebody in prison or in a jail being like, geez. Like,
yeah. Say yeah. Geez. Yeah.
But she, I mean, it's insane how
happy.
Much she looks like her former self when she was 21. Like,
oh yeah, for sure. Just the long hair is a different color. In 2018, the sheriff's office released the DNA evidence that they had that solidified their arrest warrant. So the brown hairs found in the Chrysler Baron, along with the curly wig fibers, were a DNA match to Sheila. Additionally, one of the clerks at Publix positively identified Sheila as being the person who bought the two balloons. And then both of the women who'd been at the costume shop positively identified Sheila in a photo lineup as the woman who had purchased the clown costume. Now, this is 30 years later, but it's an ID for the police.
Yeah. We know how we feel about eyewitness accounts.
Mm-hmm. Joey told a reporter that he'd actually met Sheila before his mother was killed. It was about 6 months before the shooting. There was a party at the Warren's house. This royally pissed me off.
Oh, he brought her.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this, what oh. Mike's mom said.
Well,
like, sure. All of it.
Well,
yeah.
That's a fucking mother-in-law. Not God. A typical, but like a, God, like a monster-in-law.
Yeah, monster-in-law thing to say. So Mike's mom was there and had seen Sheila at the party. And she commented to Marlene, she's so pretty. You're going to have to keep an eye on her. I wonder if all she's doing is helping Mike get the, like, do you think mm-hmm. your son is that much of a piece of shit that he would bring a side piece to a party, which he is at his, yeah. at his home with that he shares with his wife, with his family around, but just to say, can you imagine? Like,
no.
How do you say that to somebody? That's her marriage.
I know. Like, and they've been married for a fucking long time at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I also no offense, whatever. I don't give a shit. I don't like Mike. Mm-mm. And I don't like Sheila.
Nope.
I love Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, how are you pulling this much ass?
I know. He is not an attractive man. Never has been. Never will.
No.
No. So Sheila's defense attorney, of course, is ready to argue his client's innocence based on several things. He brought up the fact that almost all witness descriptions of the murderer emphasized how tall she was. And even Joey had said this clown was over 6 feet tall. So these are the people who were in the home, these 20-year-old kids or whatever, that were in the home at the time or whatever. And everybody says this person's over 6 foot tall. Sheila was between 5'6 and 5'7. He also brings up the ambiguity of the sex of the shooter and the fact that everyone on scene thought it was a male. Additionally, one of the strands of hair in the LeBaron was found to have a mix of male and female DNA. How does that happen?
I was literally going to ask that. I don't understand it.
One hair, two DNAs?
I don't.
Blood, I get.
Right. But a hair, how can you have a mixture of hairs?
Yeah. If you guys know, somebody knows, but only one or two of you, message us.
Yes.
So you'll never know how many messages we got. So guess. Yeah, I just don't know how that has a mixture.
We're going to have a mixture of messages.
Mm-hmm. Despite her continued denial of being involved in Marlene's murder, in April of 2023, she pled guilty.
No one saw that. Literally 11th hour, mm-hmm.
Like right before the trial was about to start.
Yeah.
Hey, guilty. What's interesting is, Tori and I talked about this a little bit before we recorded. So what's really interesting is they're preparing for trial. I don't understand how they got away with this, but it took them 5 years to bring her to trial. She sat in jail for 5 years before her trial.
And she was not able to bond out.
Is that not unconstitutional?
Right.
What about, and she even waived her right to, for things to take longer. She was like, no, let's get it over with. Let's go.
Yeah.
But of course they don't have, why is it taking them 5 years? Because they don't have evidence. That's why.
And not only that, they kept her in solitary confinement.
For 5 years.
For 5 years.
That, I cannot believe that. So I don't know. I just feel like Tori and I, but she did it. We think she did it. We're positive she did it. But I didn't think you could keep somebody in jail for 5 years before a trial. That seems very, very, very long and drawn out.
Yeah. And not only that, so she pleaded guilty, which I don't understand. Maybe she was just like, oh my God, I cannot stay in prison any longer. Even though her trial is looming. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think she would have been found innocent. They don't, The prosecution does not have enough. The state doesn't have enough.
No, and the things that her defense brought up would definitely, I think it would have poked holes in the prosecution's theory. Also, just before the trial started, they were supposed to be getting ready to do jury selection. And then all of a sudden, so the defense for years, because again, it took them 5 years to bring it to trial. The defense has been asking for years because there was this folder full of clown sightings. And so the investigators on the defense side wanted to follow up those leads, right? They wanted to look and see about other people who said, well, I saw a clown
day,
here. Yeah,
the
from that day. So they wanted to get a hold of that folder because it was part of the record. And they wanted to investigate those sightings as well. And the prosecution side said, we've lost it. We can't find it. Don't know where it is. They asked for it continually, over and over. Prosecution says it's just gone. I have no idea where it is. 1 month before trial starts, day of, supposed to be jury selection, they come in and they're like, because the day before that, the defense filed a motion mm-hmm. to compel the prosecution to produce the evidence. They found it that night. The judge was a fucking livid.
Shocking.
And all of them on the prosecution side were like, it just was an old case and it just got mixed up with some of the boxes. I mean, there were boxes of files. It's like, well, were you only allowed to check one box before?
Right.
You could have checked all the boxes. You didn't do it, or you did and saw it and said, we're going to tell them we can't find it. But he's like, obviously it was not nefarious.
We didn't do anything wrong. We investigated ourselves and we decided that we didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And there were, I mean, more than that. If you want to watch the 2020, it's what, season 45, episode 29. It's amazing. Yeah. I was riveted. It's an hour and 20 minutes long. It's good.
It's crazy. But it just, if they had taken it to trial,
she would have gotten off.
I think she would have walked away with a not guilty verdict. Because I don't think they had enough to prove it. Mm-hmm. But I do understand, and I don't feel sorry for her in particular at all. But I do understand that if you are facing a trial where you could get the death penalty or life in prison, but if you plead guilty, you're out in a couple years.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, you don't want to risk that. Yeah.
Right.
So she pled guilty. She, like you said, pled guilty to second degree murder. Her plea deal was made in exchange for a 12-year sentence, but she got credit for time served. So she'd already served at that point 5.5 years, along with gain time, whatever that means. She's not going to be in jail very much at all. So Florida's gain time incentivizes good behavior. So it cuts off time from an inmate sentence for each month they're in jail without incident. A law was enacted that required these inmates to still serve 85% of their time regardless of their gain, but Sheila's crime was committed before that law was made, so she wasn't subject to that law. So it's likely that she's going to serve like 16 months in prison.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, again, this is, to me, and we Terrell and I talked about this earlier, it's very Casey Anthony to me because I know that she fucking did it. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that she did.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, though.
No, they cannot. Especially if the DNA of the hair actually shows that, like, she could be a match, but it's not exclusive. Like, it's not, or conclusive.
It's consistent with
that's not DNA. The same. So, and her defense attorney is saying they can't say that this hair is hers. They're saying it, but they can't say that.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Not only that, but I mean, the clown sightings from mm-hmm. that fucking day. Yeah. Where do you live where you have that many clown sightings?
Right?
In one fucking day?
Thank God I don't ever see any clowns. Golly.
You're going to see them now. Oh my God. But it's just outrageous to me.
This is something that
should scare you.
Yes, because now she did it. But again, they don't have enough evidence to prove that.
But they still have a conviction.
Yeah. And the detectives are just like, well, it's 30 years old and, you know, somebody misplaced this and misplaced that and misplaced this, but it wasn't nefarious, so get over it. And it's like, no, you guys are supposed to do your job. And if you don't, then this is what happens. You get mm-hmm. somebody who doesn't serve justice, but you also could have somebody end up in jail who didn't commit a crime. But in this instance, she's going to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And Marlene's family has to live with that. I mean, it's not fair.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, the prosecution or the state, they're like, well, she's got that stain on her record, mm-hmm. right? She's always going to be a convicted murderer.
Debbie's not.
No.
I mean, she doesn't have any qualms about changing her damn name.
No, she doesn't. And also, if she's got more money than God, apparently, you know what I mean? Like, they've got a lot of money.
How has Michael held on to all of this money?
I have no idea.
After being in prison for bad business dealings, isn't that like, wouldn't they penalize you and like take some of that money away because you got it from I don't know. Like,
I don't know. I do not understand it, but they've got enough money to mm-hmm. live very comfortably and buy businesses. And guess what? It's not going to fucking affect her.
No, it's not going to affect her. She'll lose another 16 months and that's it.
Well, guess who's going to hire her? Her fucking husband.
Exactly. Like, yeah. It's not going to affect her. He's still waiting for her. He says he believes she's innocent and he can't wait for her to get out. He still lives in Virginia. He's waiting on her. He sold their business. So now they have more money.
Yeah.
And he's never been charged. He's never been like nothing because there's no evidence that he had anything to do with it.
I mean, it sucks, obviously, right? Like, I genuinely want to know what you guys think. Do you think that he had anything to do with it? Do you think that Sheila had anything to do with it? I 100% believe that they both did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I also believe, as with Casey Anthony, you can't take someone to court and blow your load on a trial when, I mean, it worked out for them because they held her for so long and basically like broke her will. And then she was like, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, if you count that as a win,
right?
Sure, but it's not a win.
No, nope.
Justice was not served.
Mm-mm. This is why we don't prematurely shoot our wads.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's now, fair. And yeah, to sum up, I don't feel sorry, not one little bit, for Sheila.
Nope.
But I'm just mad that it was a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, and how many people in situations like this where there's not enough evidence against them, but they are terrified that they're going to get life in prison rather than a not guilty verdict, because you just never fucking know what a jury is going to do. And they plead guilty to get a shorter sentence so they can get back home to their families at some
point. In those cases, which is so fucking frustrating too, mm-hmm. on top of it all, in those cases where it's innocent,
mm-hmm.
and I believe in my heart of hearts that they're innocent, they get fucking 25 to 70 years or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Fucked up. Plea bargains only help the guilty. It helped her.
Yep.
And it helped her. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's it. Let us know what you think.
Yeah. We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.